I remember once thinking, gosh, I really don't get where this character's coming from, but it's extremely rare. Most of the time, the character speaks to me, literally, as I read it.
Wow,
so,
that's good.
Most of the time, I go with that. That doesn't mean I don't develop it, because I still do all the work, but the vast majority of time, it's a matter of fine-tuning as opposed to, you know, completely changing it. But there are surprises. Sometimes we run out completely different, or with two entirely different takes, you know.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I am Ajay Tambe, the host and producer of Create Your Ears.in podcast. And today I have with me a very talented artist, from UK. She's now staying in the UK and she's working busy in her upcoming movies and a bit of the one that she's co-writing and producing at this moment. We got connected via our favorite project, The Knights of Avalon. And she was interested. She was driving, I guess, at that moment when we connected back 2-3 months back. But she's very talented and she got in this field in a very dramatic way. But before I talk a lot on her, welcome to the show, Violetta.
Thank you very much. It's my stage name is Violetta Hayes.
Violetta. Okay, I got confused. So here's the thing. Her name is Alina, I guess, right?
Yes,
the real, name is Alina. So throughout the project, there was a big confusion when the press release happened, when the names got out. So she said, hey, change my name. And we connected via her real name. And that's where she said, hey, this is my stage name. This is my real name. And that's where I got confused. So today we are going with Violetta, right?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's go then. So here's the thing, Violetta. When we started, you were doing a film project. What's going on? Are you still doing it? Is the shooting still going on? Or what's your schedule for today?
We're in between shoots. And it's quite it's basically my own film. It's a very unusual one. So we are using the same script, which was my script, but with different actors. So we're going to be editing that together. So, and it's very important that we have a very good spread of the type of artist in terms of their characteristics, like age and gender and race and class and so on. So we need to shoot with the first pair of actors. It's just a two-hander, and then decide what the best other, next pair would be, and so on. So we'll have at least three pairs of actors. So it's a very unusual project, which means there are hiatuses on the way.
Yeah. So there's a lot of headaches at this moment for you. Right? I know that I did one and I keep on doing it yearly basis. This is a lot of headache when pre-production stuff. It's too much of attention to detail. Here is not good. The eyes are not properly fitting. The face cut is not good. There's a lot of small things that matters at this moment for you. Okay, great to hear that. But now I'm going to discuss a lot about your project and you are going to tell me what this whole thing is, what this film you're shooting at this moment and the plays that you're doing. To the jump back where this is a shift. You were not an actress before you started, but you were just an artist. We'll shift back to the part where you just started and you fall in love with the poetries, the dramas and all. Tell us more about that particular period. How old were you, like in your school days, in your college days, or just growing up phase, teenage phase? What was going on?
Well, actually, I started when I was about six, reciting.
Whoa, 6 years old. Yeah, that's the thing in Romania. You were born in Romania, right?
Yes, that's right. And I was there till I was 20, in fact. Of course, I still go back and forth. And I look forward to working there, actually, more anyway. But yes, I was six, so I was in, year one. And I'm not even sure how, but I was invited to do, to recite poems on national TV. And remember, there's only one TV station in Romania at the time. It was under communism and the dictatorship, so it was tough times. In fact, the tougher times came a bit later. I think that was the, breathing space during the...
It was just starting.
Yeah, so Ceaușescu hadn't quite decided to, put us all under severe pressure to make money for the economy sort of thing. So, it was still okay. But there was only one TV station, of course.
And you were on it? on that?
Yes, I mean, only now and then, but maybe once or twice a year. But that carried on till I was a teenager. So, yeah, I had a recurrent experience. And meanwhile, I was...
I guess 6-7 years for you?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And I loved it. I loved reciting poems. I was doing competitions as well, poetry reciting. Yeah.
You were a star, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. Although there were very few people on TV, to be fair.
Yeah. For your friends, you know, for your school friends.
Yes, I guess so.
She's on TV. You can catch. She recites poem on TV. Man. So that must be different for you. You felt like some personality walking in the school. What was that?
Oh, well, once in a while, I guess, but...
Yeah, I know. Like, but once in a while.
What happened was that for whatever reason, we didn't do drama in school. And we didn't have any, we never put on plays. Mm-hmm. And I think this longing stayed with me. You know, you've asked me how I ended up here. And I think this longing stayed with me. I hadn't realized it for many years.
6-7 years. So that's where the growth of our brain happens. And from first grade to sixth grade, that really immature at this time. We're just discovering what's going on in the world. You have no idea. You have just a little idea about what your world is about and your friends and your school and your parents until you get hit hard by the whole situation about yourself and the family and the financials. But till then, you're good with only your work. And then suddenly 6-7 years just reciting poem. What happened next?
Well, I don't think I realized how much I suppose I had this longing, very strong longing. I actually thought of putting on my own show, my own theater, my own play in the school, but it wasn't really possible. I couldn't really organize that as a, you know, someone aged 10.
In your teenage, right?
Maybe even pre-teens. So yeah, maybe very early.
Yeah.
10 and 12, perhaps, something like that. And then I had to give up because there wasn't really a way. Things were much more hard to set, and there wasn't anything like a drama club or anything.
There was
like
no
that.
Team, what we can say. There was you, the only one passionate about doing things, but there were no people supporting who were supporting the same passion. You know, just looking
because
there
wasn't a system that could enable that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they were not like that too crazy about doing a play in cultural events and all kind of things.
No, although I gather, well, when I was in nursery, we did plays. Mm-hmm. But I gather in other schools they did, but I was just a bit unlucky. So I thought that, you know how you think as a child, that's how things are. So I tried, but then it wasn't possible. So I guess I gave up on that.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Got it. Thank you so much for sharing that part. So now you completely gave up on your love for arts, poetry, acting, stage plays and dramas. Then what exactly happened when you went to college? You took a degree, but that too related to arts, right?
It was architecture, yes, so very much so, but in a different way, very different way.
Yeah. So when you gave up, there was nothing that do the cravings of, you know, hey, I want to be, there was no cravings about getting into acting field for you when you were going for degrees and all, right? Like nothing related to acting. Like, no, I don't want to be an actress. I'm happy what I am today, right?
It didn't come into it. I think there was a bit of parental pressure to do some of those professional degrees. And, you know, I did gel with architecture, certainly way more than others. And I am very creative in any field that I function in. So there was satisfaction from, you know, the creative
What is related to, like, marriage or something? You know, there's a lot of stuff. Just get a degree and anything related to be getting married. And what kind of, was it that for you?
Well, not quite like that, but well, no, actually, yes. Although I wasn't going to do exactly what they were telling me. So I guess everyone in Romania wants their kid to be a doctor. But my parents were understanding as long as I was doing a professional degree. Because if you're good in school, then there's no justification for you to do anything other than a professional degree. You know, it's almost a curse. If you're not so good in school, then they're more understanding.
I get it. Now I get it. Yeah. Okay, great. Great to hear that. That's the only point I was looking to, you know, have a focus on, because now I get a clear idea why this happened. Okay. Now here's the thing. Starting your career in architecture and academia, what inspired you to make shift from RADA, study at RADA, which is, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts? You actually, what year was that where you changed? 2017, right? 2017.
That's when I finished, in 2015. I went there. So I guess I applied around 2014.
So, yeah. So tell me about it. The Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts with an MA in text and performance. MA in text and performance, right? That's tell me right. about why you took that decision of going in there first place.
Well, I guess I had, I actually had a pretty successful career as a lecturer and as an architect to an extent, yeah. In that I got to set up a new architecture degree, the basis of a new architecture school at an established university in the UK. So I designed it and I set it up and it was successful and it got recognition and wow. I did research and I got to the point where I had lots of publications and I could, convert them into a PhD. And I also got awards for the bit of architecture work that that I did do on the side, as it were. I got shortlisted for the World Architecture Forum Awards and things like that. So I suppose at one point it came to me that I had sort of done that, but something was still missing. I had taken now and then sort of acting classes, but in a very low-key way. But I had such a fantastic time. I mean, brilliant time. And I just suddenly realized that rather than getting more and more tired going down the, route I had already gone down and finishing a PhD and, as in converting my research.
There was a part, that I was still looking for, it's not complete. It was not complete. Even doing all this research and all these PhDs, all this recognition, there was still part that of you that was looking for, I'm not feeling that kind of satisfaction. There was like 6 years that you did. That's where I guess these things kept recalling you. Hey, I want, there's some kind of thing, want to perform, want to, just play a part, be a part of that. That's where I guess that was the calling for you, where it led to RADA, right? What's the thing in FBA? The Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, 2017. How many months you spend there?
So it was 2 years part time, 2015 to 2017. But it was pretty intense. I'm very glad I did it part time because it was in effect full time for 2 years. Because I was changing field as well, So. There was a lot to learn and a lot to, practice and. Mm-hmm. Get my head around and get to grips with and just immerse myself in. So it was a very important time. I realized that would be amazing. And I thought, well, I'll apply to them. And if they'll take me, I'll find a way of doing it. And they did. So I did.
Yeah, it went well. It went well, really well. That really changed your life, changed what you're doing now, changed the next years of your life, these 2 years. 2017, 2019, pandemic happened. So once you were out of RADA, how you applied? You applied to auditions in UK. Where were you? Were you in UK applying for auditions or back in Romania?
Yeah. Well, actually, yes, I was in after RADA. I live in the UK, so yes, I was here. But what I hadn't realized until I got there, but in very nearly. Very near the end of my RADA MA, I realized that I actually wanted to write and wanted to make theater. I didn't know that.
So
I discovered that part of my MA. Sorry.
You got clarity of what you actually want.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right?
As acting, of course. Yeah.
But more than acting, writing, I guess, and directing were more fulfilling for you, right? Yeah. That's where, or acting. I don't know, but I
actually will be the first one always.
Okay. Yes. So we'll put acting first, then writing, then direction. Yeah. But you want to be a part of that whole combination, that whole thing should come out of you. That's where you will feel satisfied. Okay, I've done something. Without that, you still feel that, okay, I've done it, but I'm not feeling that I've like completely made it out. But yeah, I guess that's the part, I guess, you looked for. But tell me about how you got into your first acting projects. You went for auditions or you got in people in network who, hey, I have something. Can you just audition for that or be a part of it? How that first project happened?
Well, actually, there was an overlap between for the first 2 years, really, as you say, sort of very near very near that
pandemic, I guess.
Yeah. I was creating work that I was in. So I was so busy doing that and acting in it. So we took the work to, you know, the Bloomsbury Theatre and some other festival theatres around London mostly, but also in the East Midlands.
Wow.
And so I was acting in that and we were developing it. Mm-hmm. So it was a play called On Having No Head. So we did a physical theatre version of that. It was really intense and you know, a creative process that with a group of actors from RADA, actually. So that was mostly what I was doing as an actor, acting in my own work. But also as I joined a cooperative, I heard about cooperative agencies. So I joined, I applied and I got into one that had originally started in Nottingham where I live. And that was a very good community to be part of, especially during the pandemic, because, well, you know, you had fellow actors that were in the same boat, and it was just a mutually supportive.
That was the thing.
So it's really important thing.
Yeah. So how you shifted, how things moved for you after you left RADA? Was it too intense? Like, things are not working out the way you expected? Or were it good? Like, you were looking, okay, I'm getting something in next 3 months. In 3 months, I'm getting some projects. How was your psychological point?
It was actually quite hard because whilst I was doing this work, you had to find venues, you had to find supporters. And that was, you know, you never knew where that would come from. So a pretty precarious existence whilst I was still having two kids. So
That's too hard. That's too hard.
And then
you still manage to all this having two kids,
just about.
Yeah, you manage all of these things, you know, and having to. And now this is like different part. How are you managing all of this?
Well, I don't know whether I can say very well. I mean, I was applying, for example, for Arts Council funding, which I didn't get until 2021. In fact, So it was quite hard whilst I didn't have that. But then I got it. We're out of the pandemic now, and I got an Arts Council grant, you know, sizable grant compared to everything we've had before. And by this point, I was, you know, in the co-op as well. So if anyone doesn't know, a cooperative agency is where the actors are also the agents. So we get to see all the jobs and we apply for each other. We're each other's agents, if you like. So I was getting to grips with the acting industry as well. So I did my project, I put on my play on, this time it was the Genesis Inquiry, which is a musical comedy. In fact, that was my, RADA MA thesis as a work in progress. And then I started getting work via the cooperative. So I started getting, theater work. A bit of theatre work and then TV work. By this point, I had also started doing short films. I realized that I really needed to do more acting, you know, to keep that balance.
Exactly. It's needed, you know. Once you're completely into theatre project, it takes a lot of you to, you know, that whole cycle. And sometimes it is not that, you know, that gives you a good amount of attention when it comes to commercializing our performances. That's where, you know, you need films, you need advertisements, you need some short films or being around film people to, you know, have your profile getting out, your name getting out. So you keep on getting a balance between those fields. Now, I have a question which is related to both of these fields, like theater and film. You're doing both now, and you started like this, you know, you're doing more plays, then films came on, then short films. So how you approach, what's your preparation for both these fields? Like for example, playing a character in a stage theater play and then going on a set of a short film or a film, which is like you have a character role and that's where you play, but that's for television and this is for theater. What's your prep?
Well, I find that, of course you have to audition, don't you? And these days, especially since the pandemic, which is mostly when I started really, it's a lot about self-tapes. So you have to, but for either, you have to make a choice or a couple of choices and go with it. And I honestly find that when I read a part, when I read the sides for a tape, for example, there's a voice of a character that actually plays out in my own mind. So I can sort of, I get sort of a shape of a, you know, the shape and the general feel and the voice of the character. And nine times out of 10 is, it is what I go with. Sometimes by you know, going over the text and analyzing it almost in a director's fashion, you end up sort of changing and going in a different direction, but probably nine times out of 10 or maybe eight, it is what, it is how it played out in my mind. Originally. And on occasion I get shortlisted for a number of things. I don't get them all because I'm not necessarily the best person, you know, in terms of what they're looking for.
That look also matters.
Yeah, it's really important. Lots of things. And but yes, you know, given that I get lots of...
So tell me about that voice. Tell me about that voice. Like, you get a character, you get a script, for the example, someone just mail you script. You can hear that voice. And that happened to you always? Like, wherever you kind of imagine that character talking to you? What's the thing?
More or less. I mean, I can't think of a time where I haven't. Maybe there were times. Maybe there was one time where I remember once thinking, gosh, I really don't get where this character's coming from. But it's extremely rare. Most of the time, the character speaks to me, literally, as I read it. Most of the time I go with that. That doesn't mean I don't develop it, because I still do all the work, but the vast majority of the time it's a matter of fine tuning as opposed to, you know, completely changing it. But there are surprises. Sometimes we plan out completely different, two entirely different takes, you know.
Yeah. I guess you kind of, this is a gift that you have, what we can say, that you get this without doing any much of the work that is needed to have something. This is kind of a unique quality that you have as an artist, which is going to help you for a very long time in coming time as you develop it, because it's something that it starts with the voice, and with time you develop yourself, that whole voice becomes a character, and with every project that character becomes a very visible voice, and the whole body it gives a shape to every new character when you read every new script, I guess. And that's what development is happening inside you, with that voice talking to you. So in every new project, that the body, that voice that you hear, is going to be more developed, because you develop yourself as an actor, that voice gets developed, and that whole development is going to happen, and it's going to be more properly built up with time. So I get it, that's a unique quality that you have.
Well, interesting. Thank you. I didn't think of it that way. Just to be clear, it's not a voice in, my head. It's
No. It's not. So for everyone who's going to listen, it's not that. It's not. People will think like that. No. It's not that. It's about a quality that every actor has when they go to a prep. This is what one thing that helps them out to go more better prepared for the character. And this is the one thing that she has one character inside her that helps her out. Like, that's it's not some kind of haunting thing.
No, that's right. And every time it's a different character, just to be clear.
That's the thing. That's
you know, that that's actual character will speak to me, which is wonderful, because they are from different, you know, they are obviously characters are from very different walks of life and cultures. So I guess that's why I love it.
And that's good. That's good. I heard this for first time. Every time I'm interviewing the cast of Knights of Babylon every single week, every time I'm hearing every new guy, every new actor is giving me some new kind of, ways of how they prepare for a character. Yes. For example, Wayne said, like, he plays the lines, record himself and put it in his headphone, and then he's listening to them as a music, you know, just putting the whole thing recorded, and then he listen to it so that he can remember lines. And then there is a guy his surname is Laidley. He says that he actually breaks down the whole thing. So he broke that whole process in front of me and showed me how he breaks down the character the moment he gets it. So this is cool to hear from you also, that how well you have a system inside you that really guides you in a very unique way. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now here's the thing. You played a character in CBS's FBI International, right?
I did, yes.
That series they have on CBS TV, I guess. Yes. They have a FBI International series, which is very popular. And you played a part in that, which is actually a TV series. So yes. What was your experience on working on international show, which is actually an international show, and how the production was, you know, the way of these guys operating an international show with the way they have the cast and the crew and the camera setup. How was that whole experience for you?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was a shock that when I got...
Yeah, tell me. How it happened, first of all, tell me about that. How the call happened. Yeah,
well, I was selected via self-tape.
Wow.
Yeah.
When, 22,
I guess, yes.
22,
that's
okay.
Right, 22. We're in 24 already. Yeah. Yes, 22. And then I had to do some extra bits once I was shortlisted. I can't remember exactly what, but I had to produce a couple of more things for once I was shortlisted. And then I waited to hear. Mm-hmm. And then as they were filming in Budapest, I got the confirmation on Friday, and on Monday I had to be in Budapest.
In Budapest. Wow.
Yeah. So that's that's the drama of an actor's life. That you may not get anything for ages, and then suddenly, you know, over the weekend, you are going abroad for an incredibly exciting part. Yeah. You know?
So were you ready? What was going on in your life at that moment? Like any family stuff, or you were all free to go and land there?
Well, yes, I keep things very flexible. So I do flexible type of work, freelance.
That's good.
Not be able to do that. So I just, you know, my family is thankfully really supportive. My kids are excited.
Yeah, you're awesome. Hey, I got to go to Budapest. That's it.
Yeah, which is beautiful. That's, so, that's cool. Yeah. And in terms of the experience of working on set, they were incredibly friendly, incredibly friendly. In fact, to be honest, I find that on all productions, from the tiniest to the largest, and now to international ones as well. Mm-hmm. Incredible. The industry is a wonderful one to be in. I just wish I could be, you know, I had a magic wand that could choose me all the time. So I can do, but that's why I'm in part, I'm producing my own work, partly because I have things I want to say and get out there, but also partly because I love being involved in it. And it really is a joy. And being part of a prestigious team, that we're all just as friendly.
How many days you spent in Budapest while shooting? Like how many days?
Well, I think I was there for over 2 weeks. There were only five shoot days as such. Yes, it was a long time. Because obviously the shooting schedule isn't done around me. So in between the shoot days, I had to do, you know, well, the usual, you know, trying hair, trying makeup, trying
costumes. Behind the scenes,
they had to choose them and to get them signed off and change them if needed and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was the big part for you. That was in 5 days of shoot, I guess. But yeah, wonderful experience, I guess, for you.
Yes,
kind of memorable experience, we can say.
Yes.
Just. So now moving on to your writing and direction, I guess that's the other part that you are really interested on, number two, number three, writing and direction after acting. So your project, which is like the Genesis Inquiry, and your short film Shard, what inspired you to take on these additional roles in the creative process? You mean, you were doing acting. Now you just added these two things, writing and directing, which involves your short film, which is Shard, and the Genesis Inquiry. Tell us more about this and why you decided.
Well, I even though I love being involved in the industry, I don't do things unless I have something to say. So the Genesis Inquiry started, as I said, as an MA, end of MA project, and I actually specialized in directing.
Yeah.
I also wrote it. And it was it actually focuses on the Genesis of the biblical Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And it started from a play that my daughters were doing in school.
What are you saying? Like the 6th, 7th graders guys doing this play?
My children were doing a play, and they weren't doing my play. They were doing a play.
Yeah, I get it. You got inspired from that idea.
Well, I got inspired by their reaction to it, because they felt it was, you know, God was only speaking to Adam and not to Eve, and they were a bit baffled about that. So I decided to look into it and realized it's, you know, it's a very important cultural issue, because it underlies effectively Judeo-Christian Muslim cultures.
Yeah.
It's the making of the world story, you know, so it's basically really important. So I started looking into it, and I did a lot of research. I held a seminar with a feminist vicar and a Muslim scholar and a rabbi to try and get their perspectives, for example, and also with people from different cultural and backgrounds, but also religious backgrounds and so on. So as a result of that,
you did a lot of research for this.
Just well, it was with one master, so I have to, but that was very much what I was.
That's what your process of, you know, going to writing before actually, you know, just going by the idea. You did a lot of research. That point actually triggered you a lot. And that's where you went to other these peoples to, you know, find more clarity on the thought. And then, hey, can I proceed with this thing? Can I proceed with this thing? That's what actually gave a proper research for you to go for the writing of. So tell me one thing. Is it... just one thing. Is it a film or is it a play? I just got confused at this moment.
Oh, sorry. Yes, no, it's a musical comedy. It's a play.
It's a musical comedy. Okay.
But I should say that when I went to actually see the source material, the Bible itself, it's a very different things. I read very different things there from the story I had been told, and people sort of knew from popular culture. So that was the basis for the inquiry, if you like. You know, it's called the general inquiry with an eye. Because Eve is held as guilty for the fall from paradise, you know, humans fall from paradise. And that wasn't what I was reading in the Bible when I actually read the text. So I decided that it was high time that we held an inquiry to look into this issue once and for all. But I did it as a comedy and sort of a lightweight as a way of, you know, helping people get into it, because it's otherwise potentially a very topic.
It can lead someone to actually take action. So it's good that you put in musical comedy, so you know, just makes them curious about this. That's good.
And it's entertaining at the same time. So it's a feel good way of exploring important issues.
Yep, that's good. So now is the part of Shard. Put light on that short film. Is it still going on? Is it released? What's the topic? What's the subject? Why you made it?
Right. So it's actually about unconscious bias. So it's a film about unconscious bias. And the reason we're doing, as I mentioned to start with, we are filming the same script with several, at least three pairs of actors. The reason being that we want to get the viewer's perspective when they hear the same character, but played out by an actor with very different physical characteristics.
Okay.
So it's about surprising the viewer's own unconscious bias in the act, if you like. You know, so going from one pair of actors that are perhaps, I don't know, they're both young and maybe, I don't know, they're both female or whatever it is. I'm not giving you the full story because, you know, it will be a surprise, but essentially that's the nature of it. You go from people with a certain set of characteristics to a very different one. Yeah. And the idea is to see how you receive it when you are literally jumping from one to the other. So there's a process of, you know, an interruption there, a hiatus that brings about awareness. And in that moment of awareness, you can see if you are changing, if your emotional response, your intellectual response is changing with the characteristics of the actor. So it's literally shedding light on yourself as the viewer.
Wow, got it.
Makes sense.
Thank you. Yeah. If there is any post or any links, just send me. I'll add it in the bio and people can have a look on that. In case if it is, if you have in future, you know, just send it to me and I'll add it up. Okay. Now, here's the thing. You do a lot of stuff from, I guess, age of six you started till this moment. You keep on doing a lot of stuff. Now you have a family and you have two kids, a good family. How you maintain this work-life balance where, you know, you're writing, you're directing, you're acting. It requires a lot of energy and it requires a lot of isolation at the same time, you know, to have these topics. These are not normal topics. This requires a lot of, you know, self thoughts of having, you know, a time where you can have these thoughts, having two kids with you, having a family, and then having these thoughts in your mind to develop it and to make it on board and script it and film it. This requires a lot of a discipline inside you. So how do you manage this, all of things in your life where you have a family, you give time to family, and at the same time, you have the same quality time to your projects?
Well, with great difficulty is the answer, because I'm not very disciplined, but I do have a huge amount of energy. In fact, I'm a disabled actor, and you know, I won't hide, I've got ADHD. So that means that I can hyper-focus on things and, you know, really get things out in times that perhaps I wouldn't if I didn't have ADHD. But at the same time, I'm also distracted by a lot of things. However, I try to make the most of it. So, for example, as you heard, my children and the discussions I have with them were the inspiration for
the plays and all the things that you do.
And did some of the workshops that I did for developing the play were with colleagues of the children, you know, and with the children. So, and since then, they have
things with their parents, like the parents of their friends, I guess, right?
I involve some parents too.
Wow, this is a cool way. You know, you spend time with people and then you get them involved with your own thing. So that's a good kind of quality time. So you use most of your time, you know, there's no time to waste. You know, it's just, hey, what if this happened? So I can, you know, do both things and have a quality life rather than complaining, hey, I have to do this and this. You actually combine that.
Well, there's some complaining, AJ. There's some complaining. But yes, you can, you know, because you're having interesting people around you. So, get something, get that perspective.
This is great. But this is good to hear from you, you know. You actually get the inspiration from your normal life, from the people that you are with, from the kids, from their parents. And you then get the inspiration, the notes and the things that you observe, rather than you just ignore things and you just be there for just for the sake of being there. You don't do that. You actually give the time, do the quality work, and you actually get motivation and the things, you take things out of it, rather than, you know, not giving a damn. You actually go there and actually pull out something that is really valuable to your projects. And you as an artist, which is Violeta, you know, you put things out for Violeta. Why are you being Alina at that moment for your kids and all? So this is good. You both are helping each other. Violeta and Alina are helping each other.
I love it. I really do. Thank you.
Wow, that's good. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. You've had a kind of shift in your careers. You have a family now, you are doing good quality projects which have good kind of thinking inside and something that's related to society. Tell me the setback in your life, the biggest setback that you had that really changed things for you, from like not just based on your career but throughout the life, that biggest setback that made a big impact on your life and did a lot of change inside you. Can you recall anything?
I can. it's a setback. So, you know, it's not the.
Like how you overcame that, like also that.
It's pretty simple. I had a moment of intense stress. So I actually had to take time out because I was getting overwhelmed with the amount of stress I had in relation to work.
Because of work primarily, or relationships? Yeah.
No, basically work. I had a lot on in my previous career, as you heard. Leading a degree and doing research and all that sort of thing all at once, and teaching. You know, but And by the way, I think a lot of people underestimate how intense it is and how taxing it is to do teaching, including for adults, including being a lecturer. But yes, the way I got out of that was when I was forced to take a break because there was no other
way. Forced?
Well, I was forced by my health, you know, my health. I had to take a break.
Oh, yeah. That was time.
It was impossible to carry on like that. So my health was affected. So I had to do that. So in that moment of reflection is when I realized that what I said before, that I had to do more things to feed myself, you know, feed my soul, if you like, in a really, really deep way and meaningful way. Yeah. And there was a part that was missing. So that's how I resolved it, literally, you know, with a spiritual side of it to it as well, because you, I don't know, in that moment of reflection, you see an even bigger picture.
Oh.
And then the answer for me in terms of feeding my soul and getting through work, getting energized as opposed to getting, you know, depleted was in this field. So. And
I guess the pressure that you handled, you know, being a lecturer and a teacher was too hard, but there was a career shift, and I guess the more pressure came on you after you entered to being into RADA RADA, and that's where I guess it took a toll on your health just because of a lot of work.
And that's, I mean, to say I was a lecturer, which is also a teacher, but also a researcher and leading the degree and, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a lot all at once. I was also president of the Architecture Society in our district. Yeah. So, you know.
So the meditation part you told me about, you still do it? Meditation, yoga, how you take care of health in today's date?
Yeah, I perhaps I don't do it enough preemptively, but I do. Mm-hmm. I do guided meditations.
Guided meditation. Okay.
Yeah, with particular people that I find inspiring. And that soothes the the nervous system, and then
it's a lot of anxiety, I guess. And once you have anxiety, you need to do yoga, meditation. You know, control over your breath, because that's what is important. Because doing a lot of stage plays, it gives a lot of anxiety, you know, just being on the stage and performing, it's filled with anxiety. That whole field is filled with anxiety. So you need this kind of meditation and yoga and, you know, actually practicing for 15-20 minutes at least for a day, so you can have control over your breath, and then the breathing becomes very easy for you and you can practice that. So that becomes a proper habit for your body to control the anxiety. So,
That's right. When I had the, the period of stress I was talking to you about, my breathing was affected. So that's when I just had to stop. So you're entirely right about that.
Yeah. Breathing is
important. But my work helps me. You know, I love it so much that it also replenishes me. But you sort of need both the activity and the meditation and reflection.
Meditation, just to take care of your body. So, you know, it gives you back a lot. It's just like, you know, car. You know, you just do the servicing of your car, or just wash or put oil inside, or petrol. Yeah. So, you know, it works properly for a long time. Yeah, that's it. Now, here's the thing. Throughout your career, you played a lot of characters, most on the TV, television, short films, theater plays, and you performed in a lot of plays. Which is the one character from all of this that stands out particularly memorable and impactful for you? And why?
Well, I guess actually it's playing in it is actually in Genesis Inquiry, if I think about it, where I play a double character. I play the director. So it's a sort of goofier version of me, if you like, and God and in the same place. So, you know, you can't be playing God. You know, God as in, you know, the God being the God of my creation, if you like, as in the director. So it's a kind of, it's a meta kind of piece, and that's where the comedy comes from.
Yeah.
Then you get to play a really meaningful role, but again, in a non-imposing and amusing and sort of relaxed sort of way, whilst fooling around and making a fool of yourself. And I absolutely adored that.
Wow, so, you still remember that.
Yeah,
and
of course.
That's, I guess, impactful. You know, God and just goofing around. Wow, you got the good amount. Like, this is completely great. I guess it's similar to you doing this Alina and Violeta.
Right? I suppose you're right.
Yeah. And perhaps yeah, the director and just having a normal life.
Yes, that's right. So I'm kind of all things at the same time in that, yeah. in that, you know, it's encapsulated in that. And the next thing I want to do with it is to actually turn it into a play for video and actually create
a video
of it and take it to schools. So
production, that's what you're looking for.
So that it's available to available in schools because, because it's important. Yeah. Subject.
I guess you need some guys, videographers, to get that angle wise. Because a play, if just shot normally, while a video is not looking good, will never look good. It needs some kind of camera angles, to mess up the whole settings.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Where you get proper video.
Yeah.
The close-ups.
Yeah,
the close-ups and the entries and everything should be in a proper way that the video actually makes more impact.
Yes,
as a play. Yeah, got it.
And I should probably say, a big shout out to shooters around the country. I didn't know about them. And there are meetings of like-minded people, filmmakers, including actors, people involved in filmmaking throughout the country which I didn't know about. And there are meetings in the pub. So I'd encourage anyone anywhere to go and find their local one and join
it. That's good now. That's good to know. Yeah, and if anyone, she told about it, so you can go and search. Now here's the thing. What's your process nowadays? Do you do workshops, for acting, for preparation once you're free, have time, you thought just to be around, or how you prepare yourself when you're not doing anything, like you don't have any projects on? You do attend workshops, or how the play, just sharpening yourself? How does
as
that
an actor?
Yeah.
As an actor, well, that's interesting. Firstly, I'm never not doing anything. But if you mean in between jobs,
that's what I was looking for. Any workshops you can attend just for it?
No, but actually, what I'm hoping to do an online course actually, and I do the occasional online courses. I also do some dance classes because I need to be able to.
Okay.
Well, yes. I mean, it's nothing major, but to kind of keep on top of my physical form a little bit. But actually, I make a lot out of self-tapes because,
I guess self-tapes work for you.
Well, what I mean is I do a lot of work around them. So I explore characters.
That's what I was looking for. Like, how is it when you're not actually working on a project, like for the self-test.
That's right.
You do the personal work rather than attending workshops and all. There's a lot of personal.
Majority, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Because actually, it's a chance for you to. It's almost like having a job because it's a chance for you to get a character, get to grips with it, and you are playing it.
Got it.
Not many people will see it, sadly.
Got it. Thank you so much. Now, here's the thing, last advice. This is the last part of the interview we are moving to. You started as a six-year-old, seven years, the part of your life was on television reciting poems. Then suddenly something related to family that never was not totally into becoming an actress, but more into having a proper professional degree. So you actually, and you never got support from your colleagues or mates while you're studying and all that to form a actually drama club and, to perform so you can keep on continuing the work. So it was completely shut down. That's when you actually, I guess, the whole thing actually stopped for you. Then you became a teacher, a lecturer, a PhD holder, where you research a lot about architecture and all. But still, the things were not going that kind of thing that you thought, okay, there's no completeness I'm feeling. That's where you took on in 2017 a job, a degree course, a course that helps in acting and direction and all kind of creative works. In those 2 years, actually changed a lot of things inside you. You completely changed. You just switched on your alter ego and you now became a Violeta Hayes. And after that, you started taking on projects and researching and, doing most of 90%, I guess, 80 to 90% of stage and drama and researching and directing, all of that. But also at the same time, you got calls from international TV series, something like CBS's FBI International, something other than that, a lot of short films. Now, things kind of changed for you. So this is the craft that you had till 2024. someone like you who has unnatural, like this graph is not like doing something and happening. It's like completely different than getting into it, than getting some part. You've learned a lot of things about life while you were doing this. You learn a lot of things about this industry while you're doing this, how this industry operates, how this whole thing works out. What's the balance of this industry? What makes this industry? Okay, this is how this industry works out. This is not what I've thought it would be. You learn all of this. Now, someone starting new now in 2024 or is just like you in the middle of things, what advice you'd like to give to them?
Well, first of all, don't do your PhD because I didn't do it. I actually changed tack instead.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You started
it. So, follow your heart instead, but at the same time, learn a lot about the industry. And joining a cooperative like the one I did, the Central Line, an actors cooperative, is an incredible way to find out about the industry, because you like actually see it from behind the scenes, you know, from you see the jobs and you know, the communications and so on that agents have before having another kind of agent if you need to.
Overall, as an actor who's starting out, not like having same background as you, but someone who's just starting out.
I think that for someone just coming out of college, getting into a cooperative means that they get an insight right away into how things work, what sort of jobs there are out there, what casting directors are looking for, what they're saying about the actors and all that, that you just wouldn't get otherwise, plus the network of support. So I didn't know it at the time, but it was a really good thing to do. So I really would recommend that. And also, you've got to make it viable. So you do need to understand, to find a way to work around it, of course, without giving up. If it truly is a passion that does feed your soul, then you need it. So there will be some way out there of creating a working system that's flexible enough to support it. So you've got to follow your passion, but at the same time be grounded and understand how things work in terms of earning a living, but also in terms of the industry, I would say. I mean, it's nothing new there, I know, but it's just from experience.
Got it. So understanding the business.
And create work if you can, because if you there are lots and lots of actors. So if there isn't enough work for you to have enough to be satisfied, and create your own work, not for the sake of it. I'm sure that everyone has something they would like to say at some point if they look deep inside, you know, after a period of, you know, life. But yes,
I guess create your own work and know about the businesses. Two key points that I got from you is like, you should know in depth about how this business works. That's where you can, you know, properly take care of your passion. And the second thing is like, if there are a lot of actors and there's no work and what you're looking for, it's not there. Create your own work, because that's how you are going to, you know, start out. If you're just starting out, if you're just looking out, you can practice it out. You can make it happen. You can know then what it takes to be there, or what it is, what are kind of things that is involved in this business. So you can just fulfill your fantasy kind of thing, and then you'll know what it takes to fulfill that. So that's the one thing that you can learn. And if you create a lot of work, then, you know, you can have a quality of creative minds around you in that project. Thank you so much for this valuable advice. Just one last thing, just help me with what the cooperative is, because I've heard this, and if people are hearing for it new time, how can they find out please, in short, like for a newbie who's have no idea what cooperative is, can you explain in simple words that what the cooperative, what is that?
An actors cooperative is a type of agent where the actors are the agents. So they spend some of the time, their time every week, being an agent for everyone else. So you have to dedicate a little bit of time, but you get a huge amount in return, because you get to see, the underbelly of the agency. So yes, you become...
It's an agency. Is there a website.com, some kind of thing?
There are a number of agencies around the country. The one I was with was the Central Line, which is the centralline.co.uk, I'm pretty sure.
And it's kind of agencies that you should be a part of.
I found that to be invaluable myself. Yes.
Got it. Thank you so much for explaining that particular point. Violeta, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being part of my favorite project and the project of Christmas and New Year's, The Knights of Avalon. You did a fantastic job and I love your work. We really had a short conversation at that point. I was ending the I was in the closing part of that guest storyteller phase where I just, you know, signed you in 15-20 minutes, I guess. It was very last moment call. I just want to thank you for being, you know, there and available. I guess, thank God that you were available, because the moment I called you was the 15 minutes before my very known person was not going to perform because of some physical things, you know, something related to voice. Then voice is important.
You're saying I was second choice, AJ. So what you?
So 15 minutes before everything was booked. I guess we lost you. I guess 15 minutes before we scheduled a call. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I can. So that was it. 15 minutes before, I was going to say, hey, I have something for you, but still wait. I guess this series is booked because everything was ended. And that moment, before 15 minutes, someone called me, hey, my voice is not good. And I cannot be able to perform and, you know, record the story for you. So I'm sorry to do this at this last moment. And I thought, oh, change of events. And I know that person from, like, I've worked with that particular actress from last 2-3 years. Every project, right. But this time there was something voice related. So I said, oh, right. What happened now? And next 15 minutes, I was on call with you. So I guess it worked really well. And you did your job really well. The whole thing worked out. And thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show, for sharing your advice, for sharing your journey. It was really good, inspiring, end up the whole thing. So thank you so much for being on the show. This was great, you know, session with you. To everyone, everything related to Violeta, the spotlight link, the email address, the business email address about her, social media, everything will be mentioned in the description. So go and make sure that you follow her, you connect with her, and to all the people in the industry who want to connect with her, you can go and check the description. Everything related to her spotlight and everything will be mentioned. So make sure you go in the description and check more about Violeta Hayes. And at the same time, make sure you listen and download your favorite stories from your favorite genres mentioned. Every link is mentioned in the description. So you can just download it and listen as per your convenience. And I am Ajay Tambe, the host and producer of this show. Now I'm signing off.